Well, it seems like a long time since I taught this class. We began our study of Acts on November 10th last year and moved through about the 12th, 13th chapter when the pandemic stopped us. And I think this will be our last review class, and then we'll be looking at Acts 13 hopefully next week if we are able to get through Acts 12 this evening. First, let's look at Acts 11 very briefly. Dale last week was able to get through an overview of the first 19 verses. And see if I can do this. Nope, it didn't give me the slide I wanted. There we go. It gave me the slide I wanted. Let's quickly review. First, in the 11th chapter, Peter went to Caesarea back in Acts 10 and presented the gospel to Cornelius and to the other Gentiles. Now, in Acts, the 11th chapter, these first 17 verses, he repeats much of what we learned in Acts 10, because in Acts 11, verses 1 through 3, the Jews in Jerusalem challenged Peter for going to the Gentiles. Their objection was that Peter violated Jewish ceremonial rules and traditions. In verse 4, Peter begins speaking, and he speaks very carefully to explain what happened back in what we read about in Acts, the 10th chapter. Very quickly, verses 4 to 6 of Acts, the 11th chapter, parallel what was presented in Acts, the 10th chapter, verses 9 through 12. When you look at verses 7 through 10 of the 11th chapter, it relates to Acts, the 10th chapter, verses 13 to 16. When you look at what all Peter was saying happened back there in Acts 10, he basically was saying to the Jews in Jerusalem that God convinced him to go to the Gentiles by using some vivid illustrations to change what Peter understood to be clean and unclean, with the bottom line being that if God says it's clean, it is clean. And then as you continue in the 11th chapter, verses 11 and 12 relate back to the 10th chapter, verses 17 to 21. Verses 13 and 14 relate to the 30th to 33rd verses of chapter 10. And then in the verses 15 and 17 of chapter 11 relate to the 44th through 46th verses of chapter 10. So we come to verse 18. And what has happened by Peter going back through these verses and repeating what we studied in Acts 10 is that the brethren in Jerusalem understand what occurred and glorified God that the Gentiles are allowed into the Lord's kingdom. Peter had made his case. They understood. As we go into verse 19, Luke returns to speaking about how the persecution caused the disciples to scatter. And they were in Jerusalem, but they went on and scattered, according to this verse, to Phoenicia and to Cyprus and to Antioch. As we continue in the chapter, the gospel news was spreading, and the church in Jerusalem sent Barnabas to Antioch to encourage the people to be faithful. As we get to verses 25 and 26, when Barnabas goes up into that northern area from up above Jerusalem, he looks for Saul, who we more commonly call Paul. Paul. In verse 26, we see that he found him, he brought him to Antioch, they worked for an entire year together, teaching considerable numbers. And very importantly, as you see in this verse, the disciples are called Christians first in Antioch. As you may have heard and may already know, the word Christian only occurs three times in the New Testament, in Acts 11, 26, 26, 28, and 1 Peter 4, 16. As we think about those, they are a fulfillment of Isaiah 62, especially verse 2, where it says that we will be called by a new name, which the mouth of the Lord shall name. Chapter 11, let me go to 53. Chapter 11 ends in verses 27 and 28 with some prophets coming to Antioch from Jerusalem announcing that a great famine is going to come over all the world. And as you think about that famine, basically what we see happening here in verses 29 and 30 is that the famine caused the Jerusalem brethren to need help. And the disciples who were able sent help to Judea. It is thought that this happened about 44 to 46 A.D. That is the quick look at chapter 11. Any comments? Chapter 12, verse 1 and 2 read, "Now about that time, Herod the king laid hands on some who belonged to the church in order to mistreat them, and he had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword." I think about that time refers to as we ended the 11th chapter in that general time frame, where it speaks of either the predicted famine or when Paul and Barnabas did as asked by the Christians in Antioch and determined to send help to the Christians in Jerusalem because of the famine. It might have been about A.D. 43, 44. Verse 1 begins by mentioning Herod. Herod Agrippa I mistreated members of the church. He had a Idumean background, which means he was a descendant of the Edomites and saw Esau. And many writers say that he could have been had some Jewish practices that he practiced. He was a great-grandson of Herod the Great. Back when we looked at chapter 12, we looked at this slide in more detail, and I'll only point out this evening as I get the numbers up there, that Herod the Great, number one up there, who was an Edomite, sought to kill the infant Jesus. Number three up there, Herod Antipas, beheaded John the Baptist. Number seven, Herod Agrippa I is the one that persecuted the church and beheaded James. And then Herod Agrippa II is the man before whom Paul will appear when we get to Acts chapter 26. My point is simple. The Herodian family was involved in the life and activities of Christ in the early church. And in Acts 26, you're going to remember that Paul mentioned to Herod that he knew that he was aware of things concerning the church. So I think this slide at least tells us that much. Going back to verse 1, it concluded saying, "Herod laid hands on some who belonged to the church in order to mistreat them." Some who belonged to the church, we don't know how many were arrested, do we? And when we read that expression, "laid hands on," in Acts 4, verse 3 or 5:18, they were arrested. They could have been roughly handled. And are you surprised that James was persecuted? Should we be surprised if we're persecuted? Jesus said in John 15, "Remember the word that I said to you, a slave is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also." So what is occurring here is not unusual for for that time and place, and the day may come that we see it more often ourselves. In verse 2, he had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. We learn from Luke of one example of Herod Agrippa's evil actions against the church. With these few words, we learn James, the brother of John, was James, the son of Zebedee, and one of the 12 original apostles. James is the only one of the 12 whose death we have recorded in the New Testament. While other than the thought of verse 3, which says Herod's actions pleased the Jews, we're not told why he was singled out by Herod Agrippa. In verse 3, when he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded to arrest Peter also. Now, it was during the days of unleavened bread. I told you, I don't know why he killed James, but here we see that it pleased the Jews. That could have been a motivation above all. Many Jews were in Jerusalem at this time during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which was a week-long feast following the Feast of Passover. Perhaps Herod thought that if executing James pleased the Jews, as we see here, arresting Peter would please them even more. So he had Peter arrested. By pleasing the Jews, who were upset with the Christians, perhaps he thought he could gain favor with the Jews, and that would be without angering Rome, and that would be an expedient way to manipulate the people. In verse 4, Peter is an important prisoner. As one of the original 12 apostles, he was a leader in the church. Perhaps remembering Acts 5:19 that tells us of one time when a prison couldn't hold Peter, verse 4 says he was heavily guarded and will be heavily guarded until after Passover. Then Herod intends to bring him out in front of the people, an expression that might mean that he would kill Peter. The verse says four squads of soldiers, a total of 16 men, are assigned to guard him around the clock. And that's a lot of men, but several of the writers suggest that the squad served only so many hours before being relieved. In addition, as we will learn, verse 6 tells us that two would have been assigned to stay with Peter, who was bound in chains. Maybe one soldier was chained on either side of him. And then there were a couple of doors that could have been guarded. So he was highly guarded prisoner. As we think about this, this brings out in verse 10 that although he was guarded by multiple guards, the jail wasn't going to be able to hold him. You can see there, in verse 10, they had passed the first, second guard who weren't in the cell with him. In verse 5, Peter was kept in prison, but prayer for him was being made fervently by the church to God. What did Kenny just do in this very auditorium minutes ago? Didn't he pray fervently for several of our members and for family members of our members? Prayer is very important. While Peter remained in prison, his fellow Christians prayed for him without ceasing, the King James Version says. As we'll see in verse 12, they gathered together and prayed. This takes effort and organization to maintain continuous prayers and the assembly of the brethren together in times of persecution. These Christians, though, didn't allow persecution to affect their faith or their belief in the power of prayer. They prayed continually for Peter. This went on for several days, since verse 3 refers to Peter being arrested during the days of unleavened bread, and verse 6 refers to the night before Herod was to bring Peter out before the people, which would have been after the feast days were over. Regardless of how difficult the situation, these people are praying for Peter. Let's remember James 5:16, the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And Galatians 6:2 provides us instruction to bear one another's burdens. In verse 6, It says, on the very night when Herod was about to bring him forward, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains. Guards in front of the door were watching over the prison. Things don't always work out the way man plans, especially when God is not included in their plan. This tells the story for Herod. Don't forget the last words of verse 4, where we learned he intended to bring Peter out of prison after Pentecost and maybe even kill him as he brought him before the people. Verse 6 tells us that on the very night he was about to act, before he was about to act, Peter was asleep. Two guards were with him. He was chained with an expectation of appearing before Herod for perhaps very difficult circumstances the very next day. And in verse 7, behold, an angel of the Lord suddenly appeared, and a light shone in the cell, and he struck Peter's side and woke him up, saying, "Get up quickly." His chains fell off his hands, and the angel said to him, "Gird yourself and put on your sandals." And he did so. And he said to him, "Wrap your cloak around you and follow me." Despite what Herod Agrippa planned, God had other plans. An angel appeared in this cell and told Peter to get up quickly. A miracle occurred. Chains that bound Peter fell off. In verse 8, Peter is told to get dressed and to follow the angel. The angel wants him to move quickly. His instructions are trying to overcome any drowsiness that Peter may have. In verse 9, it says he went out, he continued to follow. He did not know that what was being done by the angel was real, but he thought he was seeing a vision. Verses 9 and 10 tell us Peter followed the angel thinking a vision was occurring. We've already seen back in Acts chapter 10 that Peter had a vision there. So he's not fully aware of what is occurring. Verse 10 says that in some manner, the guards did not react to the angel. Peter passed them through the first gate, the second gate, came to the iron gate, which opened by itself. That's miraculous. After going through the gate, the angel left Peter. Quite a few things happened in those verses. In verse 11 and 12, when Peter came to himself, he said, "Now I know for sure that the Lord has sent forth his angel and rescued me from the hand of Herod and from all that the Jewish people were expecting." Peter realizes it's not been a vision. He's not dreaming. It actually happened. He's been miraculously delivered from prison, and Herod's plan to win favor among the Jews by likely killing him, not going to happen. Instead of death, he's delivered by an angel of the Lord, and he's free. The angel had prevented the expectations of Herod happening. The Jewish people who wanted to see Peter persecuted aren't going to get their expectations fulfilled. The King James Version says that the word considered, in verse 12, and when he realized this, King James uses the word consider. That means he put all these events together and he decides his next step. Realizing his rescue was because the Lord rescued him, verse 12 tells us that Peter went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, who was also called Mark, where many were gathered together praying. Here he thought he could find help. Going to the house of Mary, a relative of Barnabas, Colossians 4:10 says, sister, and the mother of John Mark, who Peter calls his son in 1 Peter 5:13, he's looking for help. You know, it's not a sin to take care of yourself, and that's what Peter's doing. He's going and finding the right source of help. God did his part, and then he expected Peter to take control and move on and do his part. Several people were there, and as we mentioned in verse 5, they were praying. in spite of all the persecution, the church continued to meet and pray. What does this tell us today? Perhaps, first, it tells us they believed in the power of prayer. Secondly, it might tell us we need to pray, and we need to pray for each other. I think we see a good example of prayer occurring in these verses. Any comments through verse 12? In verses 13 through 15, he gets to this house, he knocks on the door, and wants to enter. Because Peter had been arrested, likely a knock on the door that late at night might cause concern that Roman soldiers would be at the gate, wanting to arrest someone else. Anyway, Rhoda, we don't know that to be true, but we do know that Rhoda, a servant girl, comes to the door. And she recognizes Peter's voice, which tells us he was known by the household. And she's shocked and she's happy, very happy. The verse says, because for gladness, King James Version, or joy, she forgot to let him enter. Peter spoke. The girl recognized that it was Peter, and in her excitement and happiness, she ran to tell others without letting him in. When she had told everyone that she had recognized his voice, they were not necessarily thinking that she was right. They thought she might be mistaken. You can read here in verse 15, they said to her, "You are out of your mind." But she kept insisting that it was so. They kept saying, "It is his angel." Now look at verse 16. But Peter continued knocking, and when they had opened the door, they saw him and were amazed. But motioning to them with his hand to be silent, he described to them how the Lord had led him out of the prison. And he said, "Report these things to James and the brethren." Then he left and went to another place. Maybe Peter is hoping the guards don't find him and take him back to the jail before somebody opens the door. Finally, they open the gate and are amazed that Peter is there. Likely, they're happy and are starting to make noise. What do we do when we come together in this building? The noise level is a lot bigger than what you were just hearing those couple of seconds. It's pretty loud in here, isn't it? Think what it would have been like if they see Peter, who's in chains in prison, awaiting Herod, and he's free. He's at the door. They're making a lot of noise, and Peter uses his hand to motion to them to be silent. He then tells them what happens and tells them to go tell James and the brethren. And then he leaves, probably to go to a place that's less well known. This James is likely the one referred to by Paul in Galatians 1:19 as the Lord's brother. Peter leaves. Where he went, we don't know. And as to the reason he left, we can only speculate. Perhaps Mary's house is well known as a meeting place for Christians. Perhaps Peter does not want to do anything to cause harm to those at Mary's house, but he left. Went to another place. As we get to verse 18, now when the day came, there was no small disturbance among the soldiers as to what could have become of Peter. When Herod had searched for him and had not found him, he examined the guards and ordered that they be led away to execution. Then he went down from Judea to Caesarea and was spending time there. An uproar occurs the next morning. Everyone's trying to find Peter. The soldiers look everywhere. Remember how secure Peter was? Squads of soldiers are taking care of him. Chains are binding him. There are four men that we see at least on each shift. They're with him and they're stationed outside the cell. Multiple gates had to be you had to go through multiple gates to get away. If Herod had been receptive to the gospel's message, perhaps he would have realized a miracle had occurred here. Instead, he did not give glory to God for a miracle occurring. He treated these events as daily activities under his, Herod's, control. So in verse 19, he personally interrogates the guards before he had them executed, which is the penalty under Roman law required for letting a prisoner escape. Herod Agrippa then left town, went north to from Judea north to Caesarea. Any comments through verse 19? As we look at verse 20, it says, "Now he was very angry with the people of Tyre and Sidon, and with one accord they came to him, having won over Blastus, the king's chamberlain. They were asking for peace, because their country was fed by the king's country. On an appointed day, Herod, having put on his royal apparel, took his seat on the rostrum and began delivering an address to them. The people kept crying out, 'The voice of a god and not of a man.' And immediately an angel of the Lord struck him because he did not give God the glory, and he was eaten by worms and died." Verse 20. Herod was very angry with the people in Tyre and Sidon, which was located to the north of Jerusalem there on the map in the south. Then he had gone up north to Caesarea, Tyre and Sidon, you can see at the top of the map. The original Greek word means for that angry is to fight with great animosity. Vine says, or to wage war fiercely, to be warmly hostile, to be enraged against. While the cause of the problem is not explained, the city has apparently realized the seriousness of the situation. They sent representatives to negotiate peace. Why? Look at the end of verse 20. Because their country was fed by the king's country. They were dependents. They needed his help. He was angry. What do we see rulers do that are angry? Well, they don't always help those that have needs, do they? In verse 21, well, we talked about the angry just a moment ago. Now, in verse 21, on an appointed day, Herod, having put on his royal apparel, took his seat on the rostrum and began delivering an address to them. He puts on fine clothing. You know, who knows how richly clothed he was. But Luke says he put on fine royal apparel. And he takes his seat and begins to speak, delivering address to these people that he's angry with. You know, it says he was angry, verse 20, with the people of Tyre and Sidon. You know, so when people are angry, what they have to say may not be very pleasant. But as you look at verse 22, what does it say is happening? The people began shouting that he was something that he was not. They're trying to flatter him, trying to get on his good side. The people kept crying out, "The voice of a god and not of a man." Horrible. Verse 23 says that an angel of the Lord struck Herod Agrippa. The reason this happened is explained. Herod did not give God the glory. Excuse me. Now then, the historian Josephus said that Herod put on a garment made wholly of silver, which reflected the sun's rays, and did neither rebuke them nor reject their impious flattery. impious, not showing true respect to God. In other words, he sat there and he accepted their flattery as his just due. They said that he, the voice of a God, okay, that's my just due. In other words, he received the honor that's due our true God and accepted their flattery instead of rejecting it as improper. By his actions, he said, I'm God. Therefore, I am divine. I deserve your praise. You people just keep on talking about me. Keep on praising me. I like hearing this. You'll recall in Acts chapter 10, verse 25 and 26, Cornelius fell at Peter's feet and worshipped him. Peter raised him up saying what? Now, I didn't want to go there yet. He said, stand up, I too am just a man. Peter was humble and knew his place. Herod Agrippa the first did not. God said in Isaiah the 42nd chapter verse 8, I am the Lord, that is my name. I will not give my glory to another, nor my praise to graven images. In Isaiah 40:23, he it is who reduces rulers to nothing, who makes the judges of the earth meaningless. As a result of what's happening here in these verses, verse 23 says, God sent an angel to strike Herod specifically because he did not give God the glory. He was eaten by worms and died. Josephus, the historian, says he was struck with severe pain in his belly and after suffering continuously died after 5 days at the age of 54. That puts him in about A.D. 44 when he died. Whether Josephus is right, who knows? God tells us in verse 23, he was eaten by worms and died. Then in verses 24 and 25, as we get toward the end of the chapter, it says, but the word of the Lord continued to grow and to be multiplied. And Barnabas and Saul returned from Jerusalem when they had fulfilled their mission, taking along with them John, who was also called Mark. Despite persecution, despite imprisonment, despite difficult Roman rulers, despite Jewish opposition, the church continues to grow and the church continues to multiply. After having delivered the money to the needy saints in Jerusalem, that the saints in Antioch sent to the saints in Jerusalem, they returned to Antioch, taking John Mark with them. So far, we've seen the gospel spread from Jerusalem through Judea, Samaria, on up to Antioch, to Tarsus, and in chapter 13, we're going to see the gospel spread even further. Paul will become a more prominent apostle that we study in beginning in chapter 13 and going forward. Any comments? Freddie.
I believe we'll read a little bit later for Paul and really Barnabas. You were given praises and wanted to be treated with God, and they wouldn't have any part of it.
That's right, when they were over in Asia Minor. All right, thank you for the evening. We